Hello, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with our subject on matter. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church, Independent, in Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. Thank you for joining us today. And we will begin with our morning prayer.
I'm reading from page 204 of Divinity Course in General Collectania. Do not look to matter to tell you your success, but look up, for your harvest is right at hand. We know the Father's love, trust it. Then when you hear a whisper, now you are a sinner, and so is your punishment, the suffering is the consequence. Put it out. Put it out. Oh, may you feel the touch of a spiritual idea that is the light in your path. Very bitter, Eddie.
It's beautiful. Thank you. All right, the watching point.
Watch number 103. Watch lest you fail to differentiate between the fundamental belief of error, of which matter is the manifestation, and the fear produced in conscious thought when the manifestation of that fundamental fear is discordant. You need a clear conception of the sequence, namely that the fundamental fear causes disease, which in turn arouses fear, conjecture, dismay and confusion in conscious thought. Otherwise, you may believe that the sense of fear in conscious thought is the only fear one has to deal with, that it is this fear that produces the disease, and that its removal will heal the disease. This also explains why you may find yourself afflicted with some disease you never heard of, and of which you had no conscious fear. In Science and Health, we are told that when the fear is removed, the patient is healed. But here, Mrs. Eddy does not refer wholly to conscious or secondary fear. It is true that the removal of conscious fear is necessary in order to gain entrance into the patient's thought, just as the fear of a householder in whose house a fire has broken out must be removed before she will stop running around in a panic and open the front door to the firemen. When the secondary fear is removed, which is caused by the manifestation of discord, the way is open for truth to come in and destroy the primary fear, which is the fundamental belief in matter or in a power apart from God. This watching point is much needed, for many patients believe that their fear could not have produced their disease because they found no fear in their conscious thought. They do not realize that latent or primary fear may be formed in unconscious thought, the structural mind, a fear one is not aware of till he sees its manifestation. Therefore, it is latent fear that one finds manifested on the body, which in turn produces fear in conscious thought.
Wow. Thank you. I had a few people call me and say, what the heck about that watching point. So, but
it was all there.
It's very important. It's a wonderful watching point. And so hopefully after thinking about it all week, you understand it better. Anyone like to speak to this?
Well, it's certainly a concept that only can be explained in science, right? Because, you know, if you believe that matter is reality, or that matter somehow has powers to do whatever you think matter does, that necessarily leads to fear. It is fear, because it's a belief that there is something other than God. And if you don't know what God is, then you're really stuck. and you're full of fear. And that's why so many people amuse themselves with, you know, games, music, television, whatever, or medicate themselves with drugs, alcohol, because it's the fear. They're trying to get rid of the fear. And they don't recognize it as fear necessarily.
Well, all of mankind is in a state of fear, truly, unless you know science, because you're born into matter, you're going to die out of matter, and you look around at the Adam dream, and it seems very fearsome. So unless you can really understand the premise of science that all is infinite mind and it's infinite manifestation, for God is all in all, then you have this fear, and then something will happen, and then, wow, look, I have reason to be afraid. Mm-hmm. But it's the latent fear that's been unhandled that causes then whether you get sick or an accident or whatever it is, you lose your job, you don't have money, something like that, that, oh my gosh. But behind that is always this belief of life in matter. Anyone else on this?
I just wonder why, you know, this truth has been here. It's almost 150 years, I calculated last week.
Yeah,
and
right.
Man is so educated, so far away from what is true, that we are indeed image and likeness of God. We are spiritual. I mean, and yet that's just so far from what we know, what we've known. So.
And why is that?
I don't know. I just...
Yeah, Florence was saying it's 150 years now we've had science and health.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it takes, but what does it take? And Mrs. Eddy says it in Science and Health. It takes this dedication. You can't scatter your fire. You've got to work at this.
It's striving.
It's striving every day, yes. Not just superficially reading it or superficially living it, but deeply understanding and working out all your problems in science as best you can.
And it also requires loving the science before you love anything else, because there are so many, you know, so-called Christian scientists who attach themselves to the organization, for example, and they love the organization, or they want to. And unfortunately, the organization has violated the manual, has not been obedient to the manual. And if you launch your wagon to a star that is disobedient to the manual, it's disobedient to God, and therefore, how could it heal? And that gives rise to fear.
Yeah, and then they think they're being loyal, but they're not being loyal, because it's not Mrs. Eddy's science. That's what we have to be loyal to. It's a misplaced loyalty. But again, they haven't been taught the history. That's why it's so important to know the history of most things, including our nation, because that'll steer you right. If you don't know the history of it, you don't know what happened, then you're in ignorance. So,
and Mrs. Eddy instructed her students to know the history.
Yeah, she said that's a good practitioner, one who knows the history. So this is a hugely important watching point, and it certainly goes along with the lesson, because I will not fear what man can do unto me, or what flesh can do unto me, what this belief in matter can do unto me. Because I know it is just a belief, and that in truth we are in spirit. So we destroy the...
From that wrong education is where, you know, sickness, if you're sick, we just accept it. I used to, you know, never question, oh,
yeah,
you have a headache. And yet look at what even the children did in Mrs. Eddy's time. Would God send you a headache? No. And therefore, you can't have it. because you know who you are. Well, as I said, he's right. Only God can tell me who I am.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, that's it. But, you know, you were so thoroughly and well trained in the science. And that's why we exist and why we do this roundtable week after week after week, to break down all these misconceptions. And I've been going back to the churches in Revelation again, too, which are so important to understand each one, because it's the Christ speaking to us all. And that one, I believe it was the Pergamum, yeah, who, that church, called it Throne of Satan. And after 200 years of metaphysical healing with Christ, then that rose up and said, oh, no, it's you know, we can heal with material means. And in reading about it, in reading a more modern description of it, you know, it made it sound like it was almost a good church in that respect, and that there was a physician named Galen, and he made such strides in modern science. Well, hello, and I'm saying this because this is addressing what Florence was saying. Why haven't we made more advancement? And this was in the time of Jesus. After the 200 years, they went to worshiping, in a way, Materia Medica. It rose up big time in that church. And so it continues today. So this work that we're doing is hugely important. And so I'll have Chardell read what she contributed today.
Work, watch, pray. It's from 1937 College, McNeil Young. Those who know how to work, and those who know what the Christ is, and who think clearly, and those who are able to forget themselves through self-abnegation, will have to carry on this work. If you have the enlightenment, you will have to stand in high places. You cannot avoid it, and you should not try to. It means you will have to stand and stand when it is difficult to stand, and you will have to maintain what you understand. There are things going on that will have to stop. The world has got to be taken care of, and those who know the truth and have no human ambition but a sincere desire to do right are the ones who will have to carry on this movement. Handle animal magnetism, particularly in your church work.
So, my friends, you can't escape this if you've been called. I mean, what do they say? You can run, but you can't hide. We have, even if you only have a small understanding of this, it's very important. You know, the Christians do a lot of prayer and do a lot of work. But they don't understand the unreality of matter, do they?
No.
And this, you know, I went back to this article that I love by Nancy Bouchon, Texas, How to Save the World. Mary Baker Eddy made a rather bold statement to Martha Bogue, one of her early workers. She stated, quote, "The truth that God is all in all and that there is no evil, held faithfully by Christian scientists, will save the world, and it is all that will save it." End quote. It's from Miscellaneous Documents. Now, that's what we are doing, continue to do. How much of your time you devote to this? And I know many of you have full-time jobs, but that full-time job is of lesser importance than this is, because if the world blows up, my friends, you won't have a job at all. Nor will you have this family that you're so concerned about, nor will you have this headache that you're so worried about, or whatever else you're worried about. And that goes to a quote that Carol sent me last night from Gilbert Carpenter. And it's one, you know, we have online. It's an important one. One of the greatest protections against the unknown, the unseen, the unexpected is the work to bless humanity. Because one cannot bless humanity without handling the error that comes to humanity. In working for all humanity, you must handle its animal magnetism. This is the Christian Scientist's life insurance, since one cannot be handled by that which one is already handling. So it's very important that we do this work and we handle it. And this is what is handled in our watching, why it's so important you come, why you see in the organization the watches stopped, right? They weren't done because nobody knew about them. So this work is highly important. It's the most important work you have to do. Extremely important. And then it goes on. She goes on to this very sobering quote from Mrs. Eddy from the Red Book. The methods of animal magnetism, especially its secret work, should be exposed. This alone can protect the people from a future reign of terror, far surpassing any terrorism of the Dark Ages. This is a quote that Parthens, our friend in Colorado, thinks about a lot. You know, we must feel the danger. And then it goes on, one has nothing to fear from this evil if he is conscious of its presence and on the basis of Christian Science understands its impotence. Again, we go back to the unreality of evil, of era, of matter. This all goes along with our topic today because of the fearing of what flesh or what man can do to us. The only way to deal with it is to get back, as the Watching Point says, to this fundamental cause of the fear, a belief of life in matter. And if you feel you don't understand it, we'll talk about it more today so you can and do understand it, so you can do this work effectively. And then, Gary, what did you find?
Well, I found in reading through an article entitled Electricity by Bicknell Young, at the very end, he sums it up by saying, we classify, and the whole point of this article is there aren't opposites. You know, there's not a good negative and a bad positive. There's only one. God, good, and the belief in opposites takes you off the track. So anyway, he says, we classify beliefs as good beliefs and bad beliefs. But when the bad beliefs claim to be good, when the worst claims to be the best, we have a claim of perversion. But this stage of error is the final or last stage of error and ripe for destruction. Because claiming the Christ power, but lacking it, lacking the power of spiritual discernment, the power of oneness with God, it cannot demonstrate its claims, but as Mrs. Eddy says, destroys itself by making its claims. And he's referring to Science and Health, page 286, the bottom, if anybody wants to check it. This is error's self-destruction. And it is ripe for destruction when it is claiming to be the best.
And that's why the prophets, the false prophets, are out in full bloom these days. And all of this, I hope you can, this is higher metaphysics we're talking about. Some people, I know you all will understand because I'm speaking to those who, everyone understands this truth. So it's very important. Yes, if you claim to be something and you're just error claiming to be something you're not, you will self-destruct. And we don't have to do anything. It will happen because these are the rules and laws of God. I say we don't have to do anything. We do have to do, our work in knowing that the seven synonyms of God reign, including truth. Truth will be made known. And in that article by Nancy, it's brought out. And also what I read from the Red Book by Mrs. Eddy, that the claims have to be exposed, and they are coming out. Thank God for the internet. Some of it is false, but a lot of it is true, and people can't hide. It's coming out, what they're doing, their evil intent. So We just have to have the wisdom to know what's true and what isn't. What's artificial intelligence, I guess.
Or whatever. Artificial stupidity, really.
I hope stupidity.
Yes. And in that article by Nancy, she quotes, now the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these: adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft. She goes through that list, which I tell you before, as I've also told you in past, that they which do such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. Now, some of those words, I only started looking up some of them, but they're not always what you think they are. I mean, lasciviousness is looseness, irregular indulgence of animal desires, fornication, lewdness of unmarried persons, male or female. Also, the criminal conversation of a married man with an unmarried woman. Adultery and incest, emulations, desire of superiority, contention, strife, competition, sedition, tumultuous assembly of men in opposition to law and in disturbance to public peace. Now, these are things we see, right? We see with our physical eyes that are going on in this Adam dream, but all of it's coming out for its total destruction, and it must be exposed before it can be destroyed.
This is why freedom of speech is a divine requirement. And anybody or any entity or any government that would try to stifle freedom of speech is harming itself, because God requires that kind of freedom for us to know what's true, to be able to see what's going on.
Yeah.
He also wants us to have our conversation in heaven.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
You know, freedom of speech, but we have to have our conversation in heaven. He says.
Right, and freedom to expose what is not right.
That's right.
And the time for thinkers has come.
Exactly.
This is it, he said that.
Yes. Yes. We have the divine right, freedom to do right, but not freedom to do wrong.
Yeah, it's not up to organizations to save us. Man is properly self-governed when he's governed by God.
Yes, and that is our main thrust. And that is what we work for, the kingdom of heaven on earth, God's kingdom, not the reign of any person.
And the problem is, who's deciding what's free, what you should say.
Yeah.
And when are you about to lose your rights? It might be sound nice that, you know, well, if we have controlled speech, there won't be any expression of racism, but you're just keeping it undercover. But then when's your right going to be given? You can't talk about what? Anything, God.
Yeah, that's the thing. It comes with unintended consequences.
And that's the mode in some of these nations that are badly governed by tyranny. You can't say the truth.
Right.
If it reflects badly upon the established state there, the consequences could be very severe.
They are very severe.
Yes. They are very severe. Thank you. So
I feel that the audacity, if God, the creator, the only creator, made us free, then where is this, you know, tyranny and all this thing in so many nations?
Right. It's the fear that was mentioned. It's the latent fear that people think they have to control because they're afraid otherwise if they're not in control.
And the human mind is tyrannical. It is always tyrannical. That's why we say it is a killer. There's nothing good about it. So when you see nations under tyranny, it's because the human mind is in control there. And these lists of things I read are also prevalent and unbridled. or if, and then if they eventually do get bridled, it comes down with an iron fist that allows no one to do much of anything. So these are the times. And I was reading in the Herbert Ricci Association address, one of them, where he, you know, he mentions about World War II, that it perhaps could have been prevented if the scientists had done better work. I've often wondered about that myself. And so here we are. Here we are. So what are we going to do? Because there has been talk about a World War III, God forbid. And we can change the course of history. But now is the time. So don't tell me you have something better to do, because I will not believe you. As I said, you will not have a job. You won't have that child. You won't have that physical problem, whatever it is you're so consumed
for yourself.
Right. You will not have it. Okay. So this work must be done. And as the alertness to duty, not be made to forget or neglect our duty to God, our leader, and to mankind. And
by our works we shall be judged and justified or condemned.
Mm-hmm.
And from the rule in Mrs. A's household, excuses are intolerable.
Yes, yes. So now is the time, and we must not fail in doing this work or just get put to sleep, because, you know, it seems okay. It does seem all right. I mean, in my little town and life or whatever, but maybe with some of you, not so much. I don't know. But if anyone is suffering, Mrs. Eddy says this work needs to be done. So, and this is handling the claims of matter and the fear of it. The fear of it, that it has any strength, power to dictate, to do anything, because it doesn't. It is powerless, and its claims are bogus. And every day you should be proving this in your life.
Claims lack and greed.
Yes.
And then bitterness and envy. Yeah, all those things.
All those things.
We have everything we need right now. If we just calm down and just take a day at a time. And do what we can. And everybody does.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, the calming down is good advice.
Yeah, right. It sure is.
What does error want us to do? Get us agitated. Let's not follow error.
That's a secondary fear. Get all confused.
Yes, that's a secondary fear. Right. Thank you. Confused. And it is, you know, to get us pitted against each other and make us think we are divided. And we're not, because we all want the same things, I'm sure of it. So there is a malicious element in this, though, that needs to be, that will have to destroy itself. But a lot of it is just ignorant animal magnetism. But there is this malicious element, and that will destroy itself, yes. And that we must know goes back on itself and destroys itself with accelerated force. So don't mess with us. Okay. Now I'm going to read something lovely that Nancy sent us, change of pace here, from the lesson. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusted in thee. Charles Spurgeon once said, the sovereignty of God is the pillow upon which the child of God rests his head at night, giving perfect peace. Here again, the allness of God, the nothingness of error, the nothingness of the belief of matter. That's what gives us perfect peace. And we keep our mind stayed on him and trust in him, and we'll have it. And then it goes on. And this is from gotquestions.com. The promise to keep in perfect peace suggests an extraordinary, a perfect kind of peace. The original Hebrew text uses the phrase shalom, 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 I guess. Shalom, shalom. Remember, we hear that in The Chosen all the time.
Right.
Shalom, shalom. A doubling that amplifies the fullness of God's peace. Perfect peace is not the absence of conflict, but an all-encompassing sense of security. Perfect peace will always keep our hearts and minds anchored in Christ. To be kept in perfect peace, our minds must be steadfast. A steadfast mind is unwavering and firmly fixed on God's promises. In Isaiah, the word mind refers to our thoughts, inclinations, and desires. We must choose to focus on the truth of God's word instead of our circumstances. When we set our minds on God's word, we experience life and peace. Trust in God is a requisite part of perfect peace. This is more than believing that God exists. We must also trust in his promises. We must surrender our worries, fears, and anxieties to God, believing that he is willing and able to provide perfect peace. This is a daily decision on our part. God's promise to keep us in perfect peace is not based on external circumstances. It is a promise that remains rock solid despite the crashing waves of life. Perfect peace is also connected in righteousness. Isaiah 32 declares, "The effect of righteousness will be peace, and the result of righteousness, quietness and rest forever." End quote. The imputed righteousness of Christ produces peace as its natural outcome. When we live in accordance with God's righteousness, his peace will fill our minds, souls, and hearts. Being kept in perfect peace involves God's active presence in our lives. God's presence provides peace, comfort, and security, and his continual presence is a key component of the perfect peace promised in Isaiah. So this is our daily work, our daily choice to do this, to feel God's presence and power with us all through the day, and then to see it. And that comes to, you know, I love so much from Psalm 27. I've given it many times, but one thing have I desired of the Lord, that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. Now, to dwell in the house of the Lord, yes, that requires living in obedience to him, doesn't it? I don't think you can be disobeying his commandments and then expect to be dwelling in his house, right? That doesn't work.
So, that would be like the people that Jesus put out to do his healings.
Right, yeah. Yep.
And I think you have to be expecting, you know, both that because you're dwelling in the house, your thoughts expecting good, you know, in the future too. You just can't be there and then expecting everything to collapse on you.
Thank you.
Well, being in his house is seeing the good, is expecting the good.
Okay, yeah.
If you don't, you're not in his house. Yeah. No, because this is a mental house. It's a spiritual house. It's where is your consciousness? Where is your thought?
Yeah, and then when it's there, you'll be in the house. You will be in the house. And you'll feel it. And Mrs. Eddy, in that Things to Handle Daily, she says, you know, about being in heaven, it's that science isn't just saying it's something that'll happen, that science is actually being in heaven. The science, the understanding of that science, is heaven on earth. That is it. And this is what we must work for. If we have heaven on earth, and all of this seditions and all this other stuff I've read the list of, that can't be happening, right? Not on heaven on earth. And of course, we'll all be, our conversation will always be in heaven, and it will be approved by God. And there'll be no censorship of God's word. It'll all write itself. But it's most important. And this is something I think about. If you think you've got a lot to do, go back to this. And are you doing these things? And then the second, to behold the beauty of the Lord. So what is that?
Is that gratitude?
Certainly, gratitude.
Well, it's an acknowledgement that the good and beautiful is there, and we're going to make the effort to look for it and find it.
Yeah. We look past the false picture and see the beauty of the Lord everywhere. Because it is everywhere, in every, in the good, yes, everywhere and everything. Do you know there was that beautiful description? It's from the Healer. It's in our watch booklet, Praying and Watching to Bless All Children. But it's the story when this woman, Mrs. Cooper, they had saw Mrs. Eddy, and her daughter had was suffering severely from a boil. But when she came in contact with Mrs. Eddy, this woman writes, "I wish I could make the world know what I saw when Mrs. Eddy looked at those children. It was a revelation to me. I saw for the first time the real mother love, and I knew that I did not have it. I had a strange, agonized sense of being absolutely cut off from the children. It is impossible to put into words what the uncovering of my own lack of the real mother love meant to me. But as I turned in the procession and walked toward the line of trees in the front of the yard, there was a bird sitting on the limb of a tree, and I saw the same love poured out on that bird that I had seen flow from Mrs. Eddy to my children. I looked down at the grass and the flowers, and there was the same love resting on them. It is difficult for me to put into words what I saw. This love was everywhere, like the light, but it was divine, not mere human affection. I looked at the people milling around on the lawn and saw it poured out on them. I thought of the various discords in this field, and I saw for the first time the absolute unreality of everything but this infinite love. It was not only everywhere present like the light, but it was an intelligent presence that spoke to me, and I found myself weeping as I walked back and forth under the trees and saying out loud, 'Why did I never know you before? Why have I not known you always?' When we got back to the hotel, there was no boil on my child's head. It was just as flat as the back of her hand. And each time I saw Mrs. Eddy, I had a wonderful revelation of God. I know she was no ordinary woman. God had anointed her with the oil of gladness above her fellows." Psalms. She was a woman in the apocalypse. So this is beholding the beauty of the Lord. That's what it means. So work for that experience. See that love, that mother love pouring on the whole universe, on everyone, everywhere. That will end all the seditions and all of this stuff, rivalry and things that are going on. God's love. And this is our job, as Chardell read from Bigdal Young, to be doing this and to bringing this heaven on earth. Mrs. Eddy says, you know, sometimes we have to build up the era in order to smash it down. And you must see it and be aware of it and have it uncovered before you can do this. Because many scientists, they don't want to hear about any error. They don't want to hear it. See no evil, talk no evil, feel no evil, whatever that thing is. But no, don't want to hear it. Everything's love. This is the combination. It's a combination of all these things that has to be done. And then, so I'm always very touched by that. And when I read that in Psalms 27, I think of that, to behold the beauty of the Lord. And in a beautiful article that Carrie sent by John Willis, The Beautiful and the True, he writes about the beauty too, and how God had made everything beautiful in his time. and that beauty is very important. It's often thought of as superficial and decorative, while in truth, it is wrought into the very nature of being. It pertains to life and all life's reflections, and we are to seek it as we seek the truth. We are to express it even as we express love in every word and activity of life. He who worketh in us to will and to do, doeth all things well. And he hath made all things beautiful in his time, says the wise men. And we are to be like him. We thus see that the art of living is the highest and finest art, and that the life which God would have us live is all glorious, both within and without. Beauty no longer contributes simply to our delight. It becomes an inspiration, a source of nourishment and strength. True beauty voices the divine. It is a revelation of truth, a message of love, and it brings perennial comfort and gladness. He that inquireth in his temple shall behold the beauty of the Lord. And Mrs. Eddy's, I guess it's Bicknell Young, says there won't be any ugly thing in heaven. It'll all be beautiful because that's intrinsic to God. I used to, as a child, I would notice the Christian Scientists that I knew always had a sense of loveliness about them, a sense of beauty. And if you go into their home, you would feel it too. I mean, just as a child, I observed that. They did things well and with beauty, not just slopping around.
And if you were obedient to God, what else could there be in your person, in your home, in your business, in your church?
Yeah.
It's the beauty of God expressed through you and through those who are obedient to God.
So, and this isn't glorifying matter, is it? This is something different. This is the beauty of God, the intrinsic beauty that Mrs. Eddy talks about on those pages 244 to 248 in Science and Health. And also, you know, in prose works, in Questions and Answers, page 60, every material belief hints the existence of spiritual reality. And if mortals are instructed in spiritual things, it will be seen that material belief in all its manifestations reversed will be found the type and representative of verities, priceless, eternal, and just at hand. And in Martha Wilcox's article, Scientific Translations, she speaks of this as well.
Right.
And it's a very, very important chapter. This chapter helped me so much when I was not understanding matter. Not a single blade of grass, a leaf, or a flower is material when viewed correctly. It is spirit, mind, which conceives, outlines, and forms these ideas, which multiplies and replenishes the earth. All natural love and affection and gladness and happiness and joy and peace and harmony are not in and of person, but are the one consciousness, life, or spirit in being, and are therefore spiritual and unceasing. All things pertaining to and essential to our normal state of living, from a pin to a palace, when rightly viewed, are not matter, but are spiritual ideas at hand. It's a wonderful chapter. And it is why, you know, when the children wandered in the wilderness for 40 years, their clothes and their shoes and everything, they didn't wax old, did they?
Nope.
Nor should what we have. We should treat them with respect as God's ideas and be grateful, as Craig said. Be gratitude, be grateful for them. If you're grateful for them, they will last. Lillian had a car that lasted forever because she loved that car so much. She took such good care of it. I know Elsie has a car that's lasted forever. Donna in Oregon has this truck that's lasted forever. When you love something, it can last forever. I know many of you can tell me the same things. And so they should. They're expressions and ideas of God. And Mrs. Eddy says, if we don't see them as spiritual, then they will control us as being material, which means they'll be giving us all kinds of trouble. Our homes, our lives should run smoothly and in peace, knowing that things are not of matter. It is spirit. And in the lesson, and I love this too, that where it says health is not a condition of matter, but of mind. So what does that mean? Those of you with health problems, so-called belief of health problems, what does it mean that your health isn't in matter?
It's in mind, it's in thought, it's in what are you thinking, where is your thought directed? Is it directed at God and perfection, or is it directed at what's wrong?
Thank you.
Stay right. How does consciousness construct a better body if its health is not in mind?
Thank you.
Right. And we can't ever trust what we see if we believe that the material thing that we see is real and is telling us something. Matter can't tell us something.
And this mind that we're talking about is God. Health is in mind. It's in God. It's not in mortal mind.
Thank you. That's it. And therefore, it can't change or fluctuate. Your health cannot change or fluctuate. That's impossible. Health is like a spiritual idea that's given to you from God. Health, joy, life, love, truth, all those things. Health comes to you from God. It can't fluctuate. It's in Him. And when you're one with Him, you will feel it and know it. You can't be concerned about contagion and other things, you know, the fear that would mount up and make you afraid of these things. Because you know your health is in God. It cannot be touched. In the beautiful story of the touching the leper, this was also an article from Carey. One can easily picture the scene with the evangelist in the narrative. The crowd thronging Jesus, the leper's cry, unclean, unclean, heard from the distance and drew nearer. His peculiarly loathsome appearance. For Luke tells us he was full of leprosy. The crowd separating to let him pass. The leper, to the horror of all observers, making his direct way to the master. And the master, to their amazement, stooping down, touching him, while he says, "Be thou clean." Why this touch? Surely he might have healed without the touch, as he healed the 10 of whom Luke gives account. I believe that this touch was the natural expression of Christ's sympathy, and incidentally, a rebuke of our panic in the presence of contagious diseases, which so often dehumanizes us, and our prejudices, which makes us forget the real man, our regard for his mere outward guise and circumstance. A rebuke to this. Jesus, of course, understood health was not in matter, and he wasn't afraid. Could do what he did. So these are such beautiful stories and stories we can learn from. And again, teaching not to be afraid of matter, but to know there's no such thing because all is infinite mind and it's infinite manifestation. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that one of the lessons that I've learned here it's been made more of an impression on me and more of an understanding is that matter is just a subjective state of mortal mind, which is why it all is mental. And that's why we start the day with there's only one mind. Because if there's only one mind, there is no mortal mind, hence there is no matter.
Yes.
So that's what's helped me so much, to keep it in the atmosphere of thought, in consciousness, rather than looking at matter and trying to figure out what I'm supposed to do with it, or if it's how it's doing, as my prayers, you know, as it have. No, it's in a subjective state of mortal mind, and that's helped me a lot too.
Yeah, thank you.
In my work.
Yes, Mrs. Eddy says to watch your thoughts, not your body. And no, you've got that mind of Christ. And actually, it's impossible. This is illusionary, what we seem to see when things are discordant. Whatever that picture is, it's illusionary. Illusionary. Mortal mind. Thank you. Thank you all who contributed today. And we'll end on this, another article by that sent to us from Carrie, about the importance of song in Mississippi, Christian song.
This is an article by George Kinter entitled Christian Song. So far as we know, all attempts at Christian worship have included Christian song. In Paul's epistle to the Ephesians, he urges them to be filled with the Spirit, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord, end quote. In earlier times, the singing of psalms comprised a major part of public worship, and now we have the use of ancient and modern religious poetry set to music as an essential part of church services. Our own hymnal expresses the endeavor to bring into use for the Christian Science services the best that poetry combined with music affords. It will be of interest to Christian Scientists to know of their revered leader's love of hymn singing, and that it brightened many of her hours. We all know how happy she was in expressing her thought poetically, and that many of her choicest poems have been set to music, especially for use as hymns and solos in our services. Christian song thus rightly and beautifully entering into our worship. All Christian Scientists do not know, however, that Mrs. Eddy was very fond of music, and especially of sacred songs. She frequently indulged herself to the extent of having songs and hymns sung to her in her home, and from the time she settled in the new home at Chestnut Hill, she devoted one room almost exclusively to this purpose. It was her custom every morning, before the daily routine of the household was fully entered into, to have someone of her helpers take a seat at the piano and play and sing for a longer or shorter period, sometimes as much as a full hour being devoted to this helpful, happy exercise. Quite as frequently, she would call in all her helpers and ask for singing in concert, usually on these occasions selecting many of the hymns herself. It is not unlikely that our friends throughout the Christian Science world would be happy to know what were some of the selections which she usually chose. Almost invariably, the first hymn called for was the Communion Doxology, which appears on the first page of the Christian Science hymnal. Then, in turn, and with happy variations, she would ask for others. Occasionally, one of her own hymns, or Waiting Harp Strings of the Mind, or Shepherd, Show Me How to Go, and nearly every day, Mother's Evening Prayer. Mrs. Eddy had a rare memory for the hymns and songs of her earlier years, and often called for some which were sung in her childhood days. All who knew her, whether through her writings or by way of personal association, will readily admit that whatever the theme she touched upon, it at once glowed with new spiritual meaning. And it is surely our privilege to gain this same inspiration for ourselves, and to some extent, at least to impart it to others, that the spiritual healing of Christian Science may have free course and be glorified.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.